It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay, and joining us in place of Renee Ritchie, who's got the week off, Adam Engst from Tidbits. We'll talk about the latest Mac news, the rumors ahead, the crypto story, and of course, a lot more. Stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 496, recorded Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. I've got the new Res Edit. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, your business, or your online store. Enter the offer code MACBREAK to get 10% off Squarespace. You should. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Macintosh news with our esteemed panel of Mac experts. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times is here. Hello, Andrew.
Oh, hey there, hi there, ho there.
Pretty blue.
Yes.
I like that.
It can also be pretty red.
Can it cycle?
Yeah, I want to cycle.
It can cycle. The only problem is that...
It's a little flickery. Like, we had that problem with our cycling, too. There's a solution to that. I can't remember what it is. It has to do with... I think you need a power cleaner. Yeah, power supply. We had the same problem, didn't we, on some of those LED lights? Yeah.
I was assuming that's because these are not really super expensive lights. And whenever you don't, when it has to do these combinations of colors through cycling on their own, and it's just not enough for.
Brent told me what was going on. Brent Pye told me what was going on. It might be that, actually. It might be the 60 hertz.
But the nice thing is, if it's a shade of blue, the nice thing is, though, it looks like I've got a reflecting pool of rippling.
Yeah, it's nice.
Color.
Yeah.
It's like I'm in a Quality Inn in like Western Massachusetts, exactly. And trying to be more fancy than they have the budget for.
to me, it feels like you're in that tunnel in Chicago.
It's Adam Engst from Tidbits. Yes. Hello, Adam. Filling in for Renee. Renee is somewhere on assignment. He told us he'd be away, but we're very glad to have Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
and we're going to play the game now. Where in the world is Alex Lindsay?
Sometimes I just like to leave it up to you.
You could be anywhere.
I chose to take over last time, but I'm handing you the green screen to do as you will.
You did some big streaming event recently. I can't remember what it was.
I was in Berlin. It turned out that there was a big streaming event out of Berlin. There was a guy, you know, who runs a big social company. So we were in Berlin doing the Facebook thing. Yeah, so we were
fun.
It was fun.
Colleen Kelly?
Nope, I did not. Mm. She was managing it from the home front.
She was in the studio.
Yeah. They left me with, I just went over there with a little crew and some sat trucks.
Somebody is streaming the House Committee on the Judiciary. It's on YouTube live. And we were watching it earlier. They've gone to recess in room 2141. But did you guys get to watch a little bit as we were streaming it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the last 10 or 15 minutes.
Your thoughts, anybody?
I'm glad to see that they're asking, that there is opposition to any sort of a broad spectrum granting of powers to law enforcement. Also, I think that the FBI's responses, if that's who was responding, I believe, we haven't heard a single mention of 9/11, keeping people safe, your children. They're talking like law enforcement people as opposed to political people, which is very encouraging. Although you're talking to someone who has listened to only 20 minutes of it, but I was expecting to see cameras, election year. Yes, yeah. Cameras, election year.
Adam, you had some thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was pleased to see that the questions were being appropriately critical.
Yeah,
that they were not. They were saying, you know, but you say this is one phone, but how many phones do you have in lawful possession? And the FBI director is just, you know, sort of refusing to answer, but he kind of comes down on we have lots, but they're all different, but we still have lots.
We know that Cyrus Vance Jr., the district attorney of Manhattan, said he has 145 he'd like to have unlocked. Yeah.
But there's also the line that I really, really liked, which is that when they're asking are you seeking like these broad powers, I think almost a direct quote was, "We like the system we have now, where we have to go in front of a judge when we need these things unlocked." So that's not the end all be all of the argument. But like I said, what we're hoping for is on a day when a lot of people are expecting Donald Trump to receive the Republican nomination for presidency, we are hoping we're grateful for a venue in which we see some rational talk with people who are wearing suits talking to microphones and a congressional anything.
It could be 4 to 8 years away from seeing that again.
Now, come on, guys. Come on. So some good news out of New York earlier yesterday. A Brooklyn magistrate gave Apple the ruling it wants to get in this other case.
Yeah.
U.S. Department of Justice trying to force Apple to provide the FBI with exactly the same thing, access to locked iPhone data. In this case, it's a Brooklyn drug lord. And the judge said no.
He was very unimpressed.
He said, not only did he say no, but he kind of, he said it reflects poorly on a government that exists in part to safeguard the freedom of its citizens. He said, you can't use the All Writs Act. It's too broad. Ultimately, he wrote, the question to be answered in this matter and in others like it across the country, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, is not whether the government should be able to force Apple to help it unlock a specific device. It is instead whether the All Writs Act resolves that issue and many others like it yet to come. I conclude it does not.
And I think that one of the things that may start, we may start seeing get drummed up, and I think this is a reason that this case is very dangerous for the FBI, is that fundamentally, you know, the All Writs Act may start they may start calling into question the All Writs Act itself. And if they go down that path, you know, they use that All Writs Act for a lot of things. That's a very useful tool for them. But the fact that they're overusing it could end up with it getting pushed into the Supreme Court. And with the right justices in place, you could see something that was written in 1789 and was used solidly for over 200 years get thrown out completely because the problem really is, if you go back to any kind of intention of the framers of that law, you would have to ask yourself if they would think it was a good idea, if they had come into the future to be with us, if they would think it would be a good idea. The people who wrote the Bill of Rights, the 10 things that we don't want the government to do to us, do we think that they think it would be a good idea for the government to have all access to our phones? And I think that most of them would say, over my dead body. You know, and so I think that when we get into intention, you know, and I think that the overuse of a very, very old law, it may be time to put it away. And this may be the act that gets it done. And that will be crippling for a lot of law enforcement. And, in my opinion, if they lose it, it's their own fault for overusing it.
The Brooklyn judge was very aware of the California case, of course, referred to it several times in his 50-page judgment. And said something which I kind of think is the bottom line on this. He said, I'm not offering an opinion on whether the government's legitimate interest in ensuring that no door is too strong to resist lawful entry should prevail against the equally legitimate societal interest arrayed against it here. He said, that's not for other courts to decide. That's for Congress to decide. And I think that's right. That's why this hearing that we've been watching is so important, as Congress tries to get its head around what encryption is, what it stops, what law enforcement thinks about it, and what breaking it might mean to public safety in general. That's Apple's position. It's just too risky a thing to do.
Well, and I think that one of the fundamental issues for Apple is that once they break it, if they're forced to break it, once they break it, it's not just that they could possibly open up this phone and then throw it away. You end up with a series of, you know, a handful of engineers at Apple that understand what it takes to undo a phone, and I think Apple would prefer not to even generate that knowledge among a group of small people, not because they're distrustful, but because it really puts them at risk at that point, because there's a lot of people that want that back door. And that's the issue.
Apple becomes a security vulnerability in its own right.
Well, I mean, not just Apple, specifically the engineers working on it. And so now you start looking at it. Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
Right. It's just it is. You know, Apple becomes a large vulnerability, and then all the way down into those particular people, it just keeps getting narrowed down to, you know, could they be corrupted? Could they be, coerced?
But if presumably they could write it. Still, I mean, that potential exists. It's really important for people to understand a few things out of this. One, Apple can and will and does willingly decrypt your iCloud backups. So if you're backing up to iCloud, even if it's encrypted, Apple has the keys. Two, that Apple apparently has the capability of writing firmware, and it's not Apple. You make an excellent point. Those, whoever they are, people working at Apple right now have that capability. Apple is the only one that can sign it. Unless that key leaks out, and that exists, but it's not like the genie isn't out of the bottle. I mean, a very important point made by Ars Technica is that really there's a backdoor to everything as long as you have an update facility, as long as you can push updates to a phone, to a computer, to a tablet, you can push this kind of update to it that bypasses encryption, that waits, for instance, till the user logs in, the drive is unencrypted, and then uploads its contents, surreptitiously. So that backdoor, it may not be written, but the potential for it to be written exists anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that you can always, with the right hammer and the right wrench, you can take apart a machine and then put it back together to do things that it was never meant to do. And that's pretty much what the government is trying to force Apple to do, which is to use a vulnerability using tools that only Apple has to bypass a piece of security that Apple has designed to be unbypassable. Some of the things that kind of get overlooked in the political rhetoric of this is that, of course, as you say, Apple has said on their own that we have been helping law enforcement time and time again on case after case after case. The only time when we said no is when they asked us to write a custom piece of software that doesn't exist to do something that our phone was never meant to do, because that does open the door to all kinds of abuses, where if the government can figure out that we think that it might be possible to there might be data in Force Touch, an uncleared or an unpurged buffer that might have some data on what areas of the screen have been pressed more often than others. And on that hunch, we are going to force you now to write a piece of software that will purge every bit of data that might be in even a secure area that is not even available to developers or even internal Apple developers. The question is, where does this license to kill end for the government? What can they tell? What can they tell? Can they not tell Apple or any other manufacturer to build for them? And are they willing to pull this trigger on cases of even lower stakes, as opposed to ones where they could credibly say that maybe lives are at stake?
Right. I mean, it starts with a terrorist act that's being asked by the federal authorities. Then it's a drug act that's asked by the state authorities. Then it's a traffic act that's by the local authorities. And we're talking about it'll go from the iPhone to the Echo to your car to, I mean, in Internet of Things, it means that absolutely there's nowhere that's safe if this passes. I mean, this is the precedent that they are trying to establish. And when we think about what this means, I think that we have to not think about the current government. We have to think about, if J. Edgar Hoover had a hold of this tool and was able to hack into every audio device and everything else, what would he do with it? Because there's, we can't be guaranteed that that's not going to happen again, or it's not happening now.
Big bogeyman is what happens if foreign intelligence agencies or organized crime can then hack into it, because once this thing gets out, and it will get out, once it can be used by local people, it is going to get out to the mafia. There's just no question.
Well, I'm less concerned about those people than about the government. And I'm not someone who is generally thinking that the government is my enemy. I mean, I'm normally concerned about organized crime finding backdoors and finding security weaknesses. I'm more concerned about my government being able to command Apple to command Google, to command Facebook, to introduce a vulnerability that's only that's exclusive to them. More than that, I would also be concerned if they had the ability to say, let's say that there is a known vulnerability in the Tor network or in some other system of encryption. Does the government say that we have decided that this, we are now using this vulnerability to get into people's emails that they think is uncrackable, and therefore we are deeming this technique to be a state secret. Therefore, we know that you are planning as a researcher to expose this vulnerability at a conference. We are telling you that it is now under federal jurisdiction and you are banned from speaking of this because we want this vulnerability to stay open as long as possible. We talked about this last week, and it's still relevant. I find myself as I'm writing down my thoughts, it's very illustrative to see how closely a lot of these arguments that I'm making that are very sincerely and I think very rationally held track with the arguments that a lot of people make against gun control. Because you would think, well, it's a simple thing, isn't it? If there's a criminal that has the ability to do a lot of damage to society as a whole, why are we even worried about breaking into this person's phone and their computer to compromise their communications? And now here I am talking about, well, what if the government wants to put a restriction 10 years down the line on the ability to even close technical loopholes? What if they're going to simply start to say that every sufficiently powerful tech company is now sufficiently important to their ability to conduct surveillance that they can be deputized into law enforcement at any time? And that's not that far on the nut scale. That's not too far removed from ideas that I would have a year ago thought are, my goodness, why are these people so irrational about gun control? It just shows you what a sticky big ball of problems that this whole issue is. This is why we're still talking about it 2 or 3 weeks later.
Well, we're going to be talking about it for a long time because I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen here. Win or lose, the case will continue to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And at that point,
I'm thinking if the court accepts the case, which they ought to, because it really, as you say, Alex, it's about all writs and how broad, and there's a lot of things that the Supreme Court could sink its teeth into. I would expect that they would throw it back in the lap of Congress. I think ultimately these are the arguments that are going to be in front of Congress, and Congress is going to have to decide whether it wants to, on the one hand, make CALEA 2. You know, CALEA, which was passed in the early 90s, is a law that says telecommunications companies have to provide wiretap access to all communications to law enforcement, period. That's what CALEA says. But it only covers your cell company and your phone company. A CALEA 2, which has been proposed in the past and rejected by Congress, by the way, would force Apple and other digital companies to do the same. Not unprecedented. I could see them doing that. Or maybe you get a smart Congress that understands the peril of that. And as we said last week, the real debate is, should the contents of your phone be protected or not from all? And you can't half protect it. So it has to be protected from all and sundry or
all enemies,
no
foreign
one,
and domestic.
Or
well,
no
and,
one.
And I think that fundamentally it will most likely, by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, it'll have to go to Congress, because my guess is by WWDC or by the end of the year at least, Apple will probably provide tools that cut the phone off even from them. I mean, I think that they're just going to, this whole thing, but, you know, by the time this gets sorted out, Apple will have closed all the doors.
You can't,
that are,
by the way,
left.
You can't. And this is, Apple is, supposedly working on an unbreakable phone. As long as there's a mechanism for automated updates, you can push an update onto a phone that breaks it. That, and the FBI knows that. That's what they're asking them to do today.
But the question is whether they flip a switch that takes away automated updates.
What would that be? Then you would does Apple want, which is the bigger security problem, a phone that is never updated?
Well, it doesn't have to be never updated. It would be a manual update.
It'd be a worthwhile scenario to go through is how you would make a phone completely secure. One way to do it is to make it very inconvenient, which is to build an encryption, strong encryption, that requires a long, strong password. You know, the front door is the problem here. That four digit passcode is weak. Right. But what if you had to enter a 16 character alphanumeric every time you unlock the phone? That'd make it more secure. You still have that problem with updates. So then you say, okay, let's see. Let's say updates are optional and have to be approved by the user, and the user has to enter in, oh, I got it, has to enter in their passcode, their long, strong, unknowable passcode that Apple doesn't have access to. Is you think Apple's going to do that?
I think so. I think I could see it becoming an option. You know, just like you could encrypt, some of the data on your drive. It's not something that we all use, but I think that it's something that for people who feel like they wanted to do it, Apple could put something in there that would allow them.
Well, that's kind of where we stand now, which is if you're sophisticated enough and willing to put up with the inconvenience, and you have something to hide, you can do it. If this is what Apple's fighting the fight for, and Tim Cook was very clear in the ABC interview, bad guys can hide their communications if they want. This is for the normal person who doesn't want to go through the inconvenience. See, I think Apple's kind of stuck here. Because if they build that kind of thing, then they're just saying, oh, we're making a special phone for terrorists.
But I think that the issue is that the bigger issue is really the precedent. It's not whether it's Apple. It's not whether it's an iPhone. It's not whether it's a terrorist act. It really is if the government's allowed to compel a private company to develop,
whether it's
hardware or software, there is no limit to where this can go.
And that's what the Brooklyn judge was very clear about, is this is an undue burden on Apple. You can't require Apple to do this, period. I mean, that was the first thing in the judgment. But I think it would be a mistake to think that you could make a completely private phone without making it a very inconvenient phone to use that no one would want to use.
I think it depends on, because if you move into more biometrics and so on and so forth, the amount of times you, like, I don't interact with my code that often, which is why I've chosen to make it after this, made it a little longer.
You're trusting the fingerprint reader, and that the fingerprint reader doesn't have a back door.
Yes. No, absolutely.
I think it probably does, I hate to tell you.
It's really just a matter of, I mean, I think that in many ways it's a matter of reducing the ability to do it. And obviously, it's given that the government's trying to hack into it, and our government's pretty sophisticated when it comes to hacking, it obviously is a relatively good, pretty good protection.
I feel like there's a lot of theater going on right now, and that we may not really know what's going on.
Well, this is all because of the lack of specific direction
Congress.
That's been offered by the law. But exactly. The reason why I use the All Writs Act is because there is not a law that's currently in place. And the reason why law enforcement at the case level, not at the bureau level, not at the political level, the reason why law enforcement is trying to pressure Apple into doing this is because there is no legal definition of what limits they have to rights to personal and private information. And so lacking that guidance, of course, they're going to go for however much the data they think they're going to need in order to move forward in their goal.
And more is always better. Yeah, the more data they can get, the better, because they never quite know what they're going to want it for. And so, I mean, I think a lot of the problem here for those of us who are, kind of seeing it as this specific phone, is it doesn't seem like there's that much information that could be on it that could be useful. I mean, they destroyed their personal phones. Yeah, there's 18 minutes, blah, blah, blah.
This isn't about this phone. You know
precisely
that.
That's my point. It's not about this phone. It's about being able to get this information in general. Yeah. That's exactly the whole idea.
Interesting article in Slate by Michael Noah Smith saying the FBI isn't asking to access an uncrackable safe. It wants to compromise the boundaries of the self. The iPhone is an extension of your mind. I mean, I see why law enforcement wants to get into these phones. They really are magical treasure troves of information that could be used in many, many situations. My fundamental question is it possible to secure these? Would people use such a phone? In other words, could the normal average Joe be assured that his phone is private? And of course, Congress is going to answer the question, should law enforcement have some form of access to those phones? And can that be done without compromising public safety? Those are two questions.
And I think that it's also, how does it compromise, business, not just Apple's business, but all business?
Yeah, extend public safety to include the economy.
Right. I mean, because the issue is that the fallout from the NS, you know, from the Snowden documents has already caused all kinds of damage for cloud-based companies. If it gets to a point where no one feels like anything is safe in the United States, we can be pretty much guaranteed that almost all data will move out of the United States. You know, move out of the jurisdiction that's going to allow that. I mean, by law, but, probably but in most of these other countries.
Answer this question for me. Is it possible to make a consumer-friendly phone that is secure? I don't think so.
No, and the other thing that we're overlooking is that no matter what I've done to protect my phone or my data, if I've secured it so that I can get that data out, so long as I am alive, right. The government and law enforcement has they have extra tools against me. They're not going to start putting pressure on Apple. They're going to put more pressure on me. And they're going to basically, no matter how good my lawyers are, they're going to find a way to make it much, much, much more attractive for me to unlock that phone for them or to get a court to force me to unlock it for them rather than to try to take on a company that has $230 billion in cash somewhere.
And I think also, you know, this gets back a little bit to the concept of self, is that for the most part, what's in a phone is communicated. And so by definition, those communications had to take place over some space, over some transmission medium, and there's someone else on the other side of it. So that does tend to hurt the self concept a little bit. It's not like you're just talking to your phone and it's, you know, it's you and your phone and you're making notes to yourself about how you're going to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, you might, let's say you're scouting a location for planting a bomb and you're taking pictures of that location. Those are private communications that would be of great interest.
Oh, I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm just saying that
well, some of it's public, but not all of it
is well, not public, but at least multi-party.
And my point is, if it's not 100% secure, then law enforcement will always have a way in. So really, all we can hope for is Congress to say, all right, you could compel this FBI, but we forbid it.
Which hasn't been that effective in the past when it comes to the NSA.
Exactly. NSA is unlawful. Many of NSA's activities, according to Snowden, are unlawful. Partly because they're perpetrated against American citizens.
Right. Right. I mean.
So, really, if you're going to be, realpolitik, you can't secure a phone, and there's no way government is going to not take advantage of the phone. So almost all of this is moot. Congress can do what it wants. The courts can do what they want. Apple can do what they want. It doesn't matter.
There's, the government is not the only actor here.
No, but I'm just saying precisely. So if there's always a back door and no law can stop government or a bad actor or the mafia, I don't understand what anybody's proposing. What is the proposal?
Assuming that Apple's encryption isn't good enough to stop the foreign intelligence agencies and organized crime and whatnot.
No, his encryption is fine, but there's a back door already.
But that back door is not available. I mean, if that back door has been available since day one, hasn't been compromised.
It's widely believed, according to Snowden, that there are 0 days against the iPhone that NSA has.
Yeah, but there's a difference between a back door and a security vulnerability get around. Yeah.
Yeah. But it exists.
It's not that anybody can just walk right into a phone. If that were true, I don't think the FBI would bother forcing Apple to do anything. This definitely identifies something that FBI does not have the capability of.
Well, that's where my theater supposition comes in.
I'll leave that on the table as a possibility.
It's kind of a conspiracy theory.
I don't see any data that could point to that right now. Yeah. But I think you do have to be broad-minded enough to imagine.
In fact, there was data in the New York case. That Judge Orenstein actually, one of the criteria in which he threw out or denied the government's motion was that the government had first said, we can break into the phone, the drug trafficker phone. Then they said, no, we can't break into the drug trafficker phone. And then third, they said, well, maybe we can, but maybe if we did it wrong, we'd erase the whole thing, and that's too dangerous. And the judge basically said, you've got to figure out your story because it is unreasonable to be asking Apple to do anything when you don't even know what your situation is. So the government used to be able to do some of this stuff. I forget it was iPhone box. There was some hacking forensics tool that could get through earlier iPhones in certain ways and things like that. And so some of this has been possible in the past, but is increasingly no longer possible. And so that's, I think, one of the confusions. But if the FBI could just do it, then again, they wouldn't be asking Apple.
Well, and I think that the fundamental, case against the idea that that this is all theater and they're trying to actually make people think that the phone is secure by losing a case where they say they can't get in is I think that the fundamental issue with that is that generally the government is just not that smart. You mean like they're just not?
Director Comey is not coming off that smart in his testimony so far. I agree. Yeah.
The issue
but
is
remember the director of the FBI is a political person, right? Is an appointee. He's not the real administrator.
Well, and I think the more plausible conspiracy theory is that the fact that they changed the passcode for the iCloud means that they either purposefully wanted to make this a case or they're incompetent.
There's some scenarios you could see where they thought that was a good idea.
Remember that this was not owned by the person that committed these crimes. It's owned by their employer. And the logical reason for them to do this thing that screwed them royally was that what if there's another person out there who has that password? Would they be able to remote wipe the phone? We need to take control over this iTunes account to make sure that whatever data is on that phone can stay intact. There's been a lot of mishigas about who made that request or who made that order, but that's not a smoking gun about anything.
I'm going to say it one more time, and then I'm going to drop it, but I think this is all completely moot because of two things. One, it's impossible, in my opinion, to make a secure phone that is usable by normal people, and that's what we want to protect because terrorists and bad guys who are sufficient for sophistication can do this, anyway. So we want to make it so that somebody who's just walking down the street has a private phone. I would submit, one, it's not possible to do that, and two, that while you might have, and I hope you will have, Congress pass a law saying this is not, don't go after this, and the courts seem to agree so far and probably will continue to agree. Doesn't even matter because of unlawful actors, not only in government, outside of government, who will take advantage of these flaws. And so to me, it's a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. And the takeaway, I'll finish. I'm going to say one thing, and then please, you can shoot me down. But the takeaway, in my opinion, is you're nuts to think you can carry a smartphone and use it and that it's private, period. I'm done.
I agree, not a mic drop,
just a Galaxy S7.
all I'll say is that the most important part about all of this is to create a brand new broad-based principle that hopefully will inform future legislation. I talked about this in greater depth last week, but again, I'll repeat it. It's all about does a private citizen have the right to have a secret that the government cannot get at?
God, I hope so.
And that's really all there is to it. They can create all kinds of scenarios in which here are the scenarios in which we can compel you to give testimony. Here are the scenarios in which we can compel you to hand stuff over. But the moment that some of these political statements being that it is not proper, it is not right for law enforcement to not be able to get into a safe that exists, that's when you start saying that any piece of information that I have is partly owned by the government that towers over me, when I should have the ability to take this receipt and toss it into a fire if I want to toss it into a fire.
Yeah.
The ability, when they tell me that if you decided to burn your old receipts, that means those receipts must prove something bad, and therefore we're gonna basically force you not to burn them anymore. That's when we lose
I'll give you the analogy. It's really hard to make a home that can't be broken into. So we make laws and we make locks, which are not, by the way, locks are very ineffective. They're suggestions, and they establish a border so that the law can say if you cross that border, then you've broken the law. That's really the purpose. Your lock doesn't do anything. I mean, that's obvious to anybody who's thinking about it. And I would suggest it's similar with a phone. But I would also say that, and we should have laws that say that the locked phone is locked and no one has any right to go into it, et cetera, et cetera. And we should prosecute the mafia or the government if they do break those serving suggestions and get into the phone. But it's also, I would say, important for us to understand, and this, I guess the bottom line is that that's all, you know, kind of theater. Like, this is the law, don't break the law, and but people will and can. So remember that. And what it really boils down to is, screw it, just use your fingerprint reader and a six-digit passcode and not worry so much. Because the truth is, it's penetrable, and the only thing that's protecting you is custom.
Well, but and I think that it is, you know, the reason that the ruling is important, of course, is that it's a difference between it being used at certain points and it being rampant. You know, so I think that it is not, you know, when we decide that there's a law that says we're not going to, that, you know, that we can, you know, you can't break into it, it means that maybe the NSA is going to continue to do what it's going to do. Maybe other actors will continue to do that process and obviously keep on working down that path. But it means that, you know, local law enforcement, you know, is not going to be, you know, using it to catch up on your, you know, your parking tickets, which, you know, is where this goes in 10 years if we allow it to go here, you know. And so,
yeah.
And
I think so, just that's what the conversation really is about, though. It's not about this, whether you can break in. It's not a technical conversation. It's a policy conversation. It's where you want the laws to say, stop, you can't go past that.
And Apple is pushing hard on it going to Congress.
Yeah.
Tim Cook has said that repeatedly, yeah. And I think that's the right place to send it.
It's about policy. As long as people don't misunderstand and think that it's about real security, it's not. It's about policy. In the same way that we have laws against burglary, it's about policy.
And I think that Apple also knows that the appetite for Congress to dig too deeply into this is probably pretty low, given the SOPA and PIPA conversation. You know, I have a feeling that they're probably not really going to, especially in election year, aren't going to want to do it, or probably aren't going to want to do it at all. You know, I think that it will be, that's my guess, is that that this is probably going to be a dead end for the FBI.
By the way, Apple has just hired the guy behind Signal, which is an excellent, secure, encrypted messaging service. It's the one Edward Snowden said everybody should use. And Frederick Jacobs is now going to work for the core OS security team at Apple. He says this summer, which sounds like it might be like an internship.
It is.
It's an internship. How old is this guy? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Unpaid internship. Yeah. He's just here to get college credits.
I've tried to get my resume together. But that's good. I mean, that's good. Apple's paying attention to this. They need a secure – I mean, messages should be secure. We don't really know how messages works. Apple hasn't been very forthright in that. But they have done good things in security.
And some of the hypocrisy here, of course, is also that our own government builds tools resistors within, you know, we've built tools with resistors within countries we don't agree with so that they can anonymously communicate back to the United States. You mean, you know, like, you know, it's right. This is not a, you know, so we're trying to take it away here.
The government is not monolithic on this. The NSA has said time and time again, everybody needs strong end-to-end encryption.
Right.
I mean, there's not, and even within the NSA, there seems to be division on that.
Right.
So, no, I agree. This is a debate, and it's an appropriate debate for this time. Frankly.
And we have to solve it now, because otherwise, how will we know what policies to put in place for the PsyCorps once the we have telepaths? So, you know, just to be clear.
Apple has lost a case against Samsung. More court news. Court news is about the most boring you can have. But this is interesting, because Apple sued Samsung over three patents: slide to unlock, autocorrect, and I can't remember what the third one. Oh, detecting when a series of numbers can be dialed, you know, clicking the numbers in a text to make a phone call. Mm-hmm. Two of those patents in this case. So Apple won. The jury awarded Apple $120 million of Samsung's money. Samsung appealed. The three-judge panel has now said not only that they reversed that award, they said, you know what, those first two patents aren't really any good. We're going to overturn those. Slide to unlock and autocorrect. You know, I kind of have to say I agree. Slide to unlock,
yeah, pretty darn obvious.
And of course, Apple is right to pursue and protect its patents. These things happen. Apple said today's decision is a. Wait a minute, Samsung said today's. Samsung said today's decision is a win for consumer choice and puts competition back where it's. Well, it could have been either of them, depending on who won. Apple declined to comment. But you know, that just shows you software patents are just sucky to begin with.
I think this lawsuit has become self-aware and is now impossible to kill.
Although the big one, the $1 billion judgment, was not on was on Trade Dress was that Samsung copied the look of the iPhone. And that one, as far as I know, Samsung still owes them the money. Have they written the check yet? I don't know. Well, here we go. March. Now, it was March 15th. Now it's March 21st. We're going to talk about, take a break, and then when we come back, talk about Apple's event and some of the things, some of the rumors, knowing that they're just rumors, meaningless rumors, but it's fun to repeat them since we have nothing else to talk about. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is an amazing thing for people who like to cook but don't want to shop. I mean, I like to shop. Shopping is really fun, but shopping is one of those things that could take time, you know. Yeah, I imagine myself in the Sunday marketplace squeezing melons, haggling with vendors. Is that tomato ripe? And in fact, it's usually the end of the day. You're going home. You're exhausted. You know you got to make dinner and you don't have anything in the refrigerator. That's when I'm so happy. My eyes light up and I get home and I see the Blue Apron box waiting for me. Inside, three different recipes, six meals total. Delicious. Everything's fresh. Just the right ingredients. You don't need anything because it's all in there. And there's no waste because it's all in there, but no more. And the recipe card. And it's stuff you probably would never think of using or making. And you learn these new ingredients, these new recipes, and people are impressed and everybody's happy. It's wonderful. And it's for less than $10 a meal. The meats and fish, too, always fresh. The box is refrigerated. They time it with your schedule. You can look at the menus, proposed menus, and change them. They can make them the way, you know, you're served various dietary needs, including vegetarian, absolutely. Every meal is a joy to prepare, less than 40 minutes. And because you don't have to go to the grocery store, you're cooking and eating within an hour of getting home. And no more sad takeout. Come on. That's not good for you. How about adobo-style chicken with roasted bok choy and jasmine rice tonight? How about that? Something a little vegetarian on your list? How about baked jerk tofu and smashed plantains with garlic, ginger, collard greens? Now, I'll tell you what. I always want to use collard greens, but, man, cooking them is hard. This will teach you. And now, the next time you're in the store and you see collard greens, you go, I know how to do that. I can make them delicious. You'll be using ingredients you've never seen or tried, like watermelon, radishes, or farro. We discovered a new bok choy. I wish I could remember the name, but it was wonderful. It was a five-spice Taiwanese chicken. It was so good. So my mouth waters when I do these recipes because I think of the recipes I've made from Blue Apron. You know what? I got two meals free for you. Why don't you just try it, okay? Go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out the week's menu. Pick out your first two meals. It's free. blueapron.com/twit. And then you'll see what I'm talking about. By the way, they have plans for two, which is nice. Great for date night. If you want to impress a certain someone, man, they'll be impressed. But they also have family plans with kid-friendly ingredients. So check it out. blueapron.com/twit. So it was going to be March 15th. Now it's March 21st. I don't know what to believe with rumors.
Well, supposedly the 15th. Now supposedly.
It's all made up. The first. There's been no invitation sent out, have there?
Not to my knowledge.
No. Not to my knowledge, but I wouldn't know anyway.
That's particularly fine for me because there were a lot of people. The Yosemite Conference at Yosemite National Park is the week of the 15th.
Oh, good.
And given that, Dalver, I'm going to be there.
You're going?
Going to be good. There. Ren is going to be there.
You're halfway there. What is the Yosemite Conference? You did that last year, right?
Yeah. It's that great conference that takes place at Yosemite National Park.
Nice.
And so thank God that Apple didn't like change the name of the latest version to, you know, like World Trash Dump North
Long
Dakota.
Oh, is the Yosemite conference a Mac conference named after the Yosemite version of OS X?
Yeah, it's a conference where it's less about here's how to maximize your cable modem throughput. It's more about people who are very active and very visible in the Mac community talking about larger issues about productivity and life and direction of their company and Apple and all these other sort of things. It's basically a week long TED at one of the most beautiful state parks in the entire country, and also good food and a lot of thoughtful stuff to think about and hear about.
Well,
I will be talking about cows, unfortunately.
You know what? So. That might explain why they moved it from the 15th to the 21st. It was all about Yosemite Cows.
I doubt it, but a lot of people would have had to.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Apple's never done things around press before, so I somehow doubt that they was part of it.
Well, it's a new Apple.
It would have been a prove that you love me. Cancel your trip to Yosemite.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And you're already halfway to California. It's a natural, more than halfway. You're almost to California. And, yeah. Wait a minute, isn't Yosemite in California? Oh, California.
Yeah. Think of Yellowstone.
I was thinking of Yellowstone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jellystone Park, where Yogi the Bear is. The other thing is, of course, we thought there was going to. I think this is safe to say there'll be a new iPad, but now the rumor is not Air 3, but iPad Pro Mini, or whatever.
Well,
iPad Pro.
Yeah.
9.7 inch iPad. And the reason that's good is, as you were begging, pleading, wishing, dreaming for, Alex Lindsay, it will have a pencil.
I think this is going to be great. I mean, I think I'll be more likely to use this one than the iPad Pro that I have now, which I think is great. I mean, I think the iPad Pro I've really grown to love using it, which is I had kind of stopped using iPads in general. I just weren't really with the pen and with all the other tools. I think it's actually become, I actually built an entire presentation where I was over the last couple of days, where when I was sketching out ideas, I had my pen and I could build it in Keynote, and I was split screening with notes, and I draw a little what I want to do later, like plan it, and then simply copy it and put it into Keynote, and it was all touch and draw and touch and draw, and I was like, okay, that's exactly what I wanted. it's still a little big, so having a smaller one will be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot more practical than the 13-inch iPad Pro. I showed someone their first experience with the iPad Pro in the flesh last night, and they couldn't get over, my God, like how it's just a huge iPad. How do you deal with having this huge iPad? And I had to say, well, if you'd like to use it as a primary device, but I think there are a lot of people who just want to use, like the size of the 9.7 inch iPad, they just wish that it were more useful. And Apple Pencil is definitely something that makes it a lot more useful.
What makes it pro? Somebody in the chat room saying, well, the Pencil's one, four speakers is another. Lack of
higher,
go ahead.
The new processor, which makes it agile enough to do like multi-layer Photoshop style graphics, makes it easy to do 4K video. It makes the iPad Air's CPU was good enough so that if you're doing mostly pushing text and numbers around, it was adequate. But this takes it to a brand new level. It really is desktop class and desktop speed software, given that these are apps that have been written specifically for a mobile environment.
Of course, good news, the new beta of 9.3, which just came out, has restored the navigation capability. I'm on the wrong article, Jason. Has restored the navigation. Nice of you to show that, but that's not what I'm talking about. Restored the navigation features of the Apple Pencil. That was something they took out for a few versions, but there was certainly a hue and cry. The fact that you could use it to scroll or tap buttons and things like that. What else? So it's better processor, four speakers. You don't get 3D touch because the pencil.
Right. Well, it's not.
Oh,
really
better camera is another rumor I saw. 12.
One rumor is a 12 megapixel camera, like the same camera that you'll have in the iPhone 6.
See, I was saying they should do that with the Pro, because that's what Pro means to me.
Well, I don't. I'm not really sure. Because how many people are really? It'd be nice to have a better camera just for whatever reason. But how? I have no problem walking around looking like this. But even I, like, would be
it's kind of big.
Feel kind of weird taking pictures like that. But the 4K video is actually more interesting.
Andy, I think you're alone, by the way, in that concern, because I see so many people using giant tablets.
You go to school events and people just
have. I know. Isn't it horrible? I can't see my kid.
I think 4K video is a much bigger deal, because you do have a CPU that is capable of editing multiple 4K video streams and cutting stuff together. So there are so many producers that actually are perfectly happy with filming the entire thing on an iPad, cutting it on that iPad, and then shipping it right from their train station.
It's so cool.
Well, and I think that the interesting thing about 4K is that once you start having cameras that are capturing 4K, it leads you to believe that at some point the Apple TV is going to support the videos that were caught by that. You know, really? It seems like it may not be this hardware, but it seems like it'll be one soon.
One problem people were bringing up is, okay, if you have the smart connector, you now have a 9.7-inch tablet. What do you do about the keyboard? Is it going to be big and then, you know, that would be ugly? Or is it going to be squunched and then the keys are tiny and hard to use? What do we do with the keyboard?
I bet they make a smaller version of the smart cover that they have. People have been happy enough using compact keyboards for the 9.7-inch iPad Air, so I don't think that they would have any difficulty creating that. Also, it's also not to say that a third party can come up with something clever like the InCase Origami case, which I could imagine them coming up with something that folds down and looks like just a really cool full-sized keyboard cover, so it's just folds down over it and looks like that, but then you flip it over, flip two tabs behind it and expose a connector on the back there, and now you can basically just drop it in there and have what you're going. It's all about what they're going to – I think they tend to make a statement with the accessories that they make for themselves and they do that with the understanding that if they are liberal enough in allowing people into the MFI program, if there's a need for a full-sized keyboard on a 9.7-inch iPad, someone's going to go out there and make it.
Think Different trademark is being updated, which is good. I haven't seen a Think Different campaign in a long time. Of course, that was the campaign that brought Steve Jobs back to Apple in 1997. Here's to the crazy ones and all of that. Apparently, they have now refiled in Europe, and they've expanded it to 8 classes of product, including watches, Apple Pay, Apple Pencil, iPad, games, business management, subscription services, telecommunications, broadcasting, music, television, educational services, and Siri. So if you're thinking about using the words Think Different, think again. Apple.
How much of that is their own plans to use it? How much of it is knowing that how closely Think Different is associated with Apple and just making sure that
protect
no one else
it.
Can use it?
Yeah. They haven't used – I mean, when's the last time you saw a Think Different campaign? Yeah. It's been quite a while.
Ages.
Yeah. Still, it should belong to Apple. That's theirs.
I think we should expand some other older campaigns so we could have I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, I'm an iPad, I'm an iPhone. You know,
I would like to see
I'm
that.
I'm an Apple Watch. I think you could go all out.
Apple's been around long enough now that the ads can now be nostalgia. You know, like the Chevy Corvette ads. You know, you can start to think about the old days, you know, the Dodge brothers and all that.
And you can have the actors come back as the older version of them.
The two Steves.
That was pretty funny. John Hodgman was on the Colbert Report, Colbert Show a week ago, saying that, well, of course, I used to be the spokesman. I'm ready to do that again. I still have the suit. I still have the tie. Call me.
And the wry affect. Has anybody tried the betas of, these new betas of iOS and watchOS? And I think this kind of, the fact that they're really ramping this up, what are they on now? The fifth beta of iOS 9.3, fifth, means that we're getting close. That's why that March 15th to 21st event seems pretty sensible. And we'd probably get all these new OSs at the same time, right? Or is it for WWDC? I don't know. I guess they do they do 10, I don't know. I don't understand all this.
See, it seems like if they're getting ready for WWDC, that'd be awfully forward.
That's June, right?
Yeah, that's a long ways away. I would say it's more to make sure that they can ship something with. I think it would kind of point to them having new iOS hardware that they're shipping in late March, let's say, or I'm sorry, this month.
This month. I know.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Two weeks, 3 weeks. I do hope they do it on the 21st because that ties in beautifully. That's a Tuesday as opposed to the Wednesday that they were thinking of. And they usually do it on a Tuesday. Siri, one of the features of the next version of OS 10, which will be out, and that will be demonstrated in June at WWDC and probably shipped in the fall, would be Siri on the desktop. It's funny because while Apple will, I'm sure, say we invented it, it's been around for a while, and I mean, both Windows does it. Windows does it. Google does it with Chrome. I find it's not that useful. Do you want to talk to your desktop?
only if the camera, only if the microphone were always on. I would love to. No, I'm serious. I would love to have the sort of functionality I have with Amazon Echo, where I am true. I'm somewhere else in the room, and I've got my iPad out, and I'm reading or doing something else. I just want to know what's the weather going to be later this afternoon, and should I plan on leaving now as opposed to leaving 2 hours from now, or just doing so even when I'm actually in front of the keyboard and I'm reading something, then there's a unit of measurement in grams and I want to know how many ounces that is. It's just these dead simple things that sound silly until you have the ability to not have to hold down a key, not have to reach for a phone, not have to have a special thing. There's just a waiting digital assistant that will respond to voice commands. You find yourself using it all the time.
I think that the other thing that I still, the connection between Siri for me, the number one thing I use Siri for is Apple Music. It was just being able to just call out that I want to hear a certain song is something that I probably use more often than all the other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of magical to me. I still think it's just, I know I've said it before, but it's just like the idea that I don't have to buy it. I don't have to do anything. I just kind of, just say, I want to listen to, you know, whatever.
For me, Siri does only two things. I use Siri to make reminders, as all in the Apple Watch, Siri remind me to do such and such. And I text my son to come down for dinner. Hey Siri, text Tristan, time for dinner. Works every way. Stop.
I admit I used to use the ability to log into a remote computer and have it do some text to speech to scare my kids or tell them to come down to dinner. And that was fun. Or wake up. I did that all the time. Henry, wake up. It's time to go.
I'm a little sad that this generation is losing that fine, must be 100-year-old tradition of your parents just shrieking at you, Eddie.
Well, I did. I also put Sonos speakers in their bedroom and then remotely triggered loud music. But that was mean. I stopped doing that. None of it works either. By the way, teenagers will sleep through anything. Let's see. I'm just
digging
looking
down.
For. I'm
digging down, Leo.
I'm looking. Well, a modder who's created a 128 gig floppy disk. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's interesting.
That's a good bar bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what he did is he put an SD card in a floppy disk. That's all right. That's clever. I don't know. Where do you do for the drive?
It's only fun when it's actually a 128 gig zip drive.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Let's go for the full lack of reliability
here.
I'll just say there's someone came up with a working way to to make the storage of an SD card work inside a floppy. There are so many computers that I've got in storage that I would just like to haul out there, or so many ways that I would like to use old floppies or try to. And the problem is that now. It's having a working piece of floppy disk media is like, I could use this for this fun little like Mac MAME or server project, but it will crumble into dust. Do I want to waste it on this one thing, or am I going to use it to, you know, translate the magical phrase that will unlock the door to the golden portal to the alien wonder realm that someone stored in 1983, and they're just looking for somebody who has one working Fuji blank 3.5-inch floppy. And of course, I screwed it up because I wanted to play the games I was playing in college.
Don't worry, Andy. I still have my floppy disk from college. Ziggy and Stardust. That's from 1986, I believe.
Can you play it, though? I mean, can you use it?
I've got something in the attic that'll...
Somewhere, somehow.
I still have the box of 5 1/4-inch floppies that I used to... In the same blue box I used to carry through high school every single day.
Yes.
part of me wants to put boot them up and get them going again. Part of me realizes that, once again, do I want to risk them crumbling into dust and, you know, preventing like a future technology where we can just take a 400 megapixel image of the disk with my phone and it will be able to read the variations of the magnetic field and actually get the data off them optically.
Somewhere I have a floppy disk that says source code that has all of my assembly language and Pascal source code from the early days of the Macintosh. It'd be fun to get, but I don't.
I can't throw away my copy of Beneath Apple DOS. I cannot throw away my copy of Assembly Lines, the book, because they're just way too nostalgic.
I have MPW on my bookshelf. I have the Apple API documentation, the Mac API documentation.
Want to see my mouse pad?
Ooh, Developer University. Ooh, which is pronounced duh.
My other one is
The Mac Bible.
Original one.
Who worked on that? Was that you? No. Who did that?
No,
Dan.
Arthur Naiman, but it was a ton of people who submitted stuff to it. But I don't know if I must have had something in one of the later ones. I have a bunch of them here, but that's the earliest one.
Mac Bible. That is a classic. Wow. That was the book that put Peach Pit on the map, I think.
Ted Nace.
Yeah.
He was the guy, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was a big book. I mean, the other one, of course, is this one. I mean, you'd want to talk about
the of Adam going to his bookshelf. The little MacBook, yeah. Robin Williams. Not that Robin Williams. That was the book I told everybody to get when they got their first Mac. You get the little MacBook. Everything
she
you
wrote
need.
That on a, she wrote that on a Mac Plus on her bed. Because she was living in this one-bedroom apartment with, I forget how many kids.
In her bedroom,
Yeah.
I remember that.
That was where she wrote. Nice lady, Robin Williams.
I understand that the Mac is a typewriter.
Dan Frakes, that's who I was trying to remember. Dan Frakes did the Mac Bible. That's what I was trying to remember.
He did some of them,
Some of it. I mean, they were all different people.
Oh, yeah, Sharon Aker did a bunch of them.
Sharon
Zardetto, sorry.
Sharon Zardetto Aker.
Yeah.
This is going to be the shortest show we've ever done. It's my fault because we could have talked about the encryption thing for hours, but I thought we've done that.
We've gone into bonus time for so many weeks with all these stories.
I know.
It's like we could.
So here's something that I'll be curious we get your opinion on. On Tidbits, we've been actually doing some deep looks into not really hidden features, but things that people don't think about anymore, like Quick Look and services.
Oh, I use Quick Look every single day.
It turns out these things are really deep. I mean, you know, by writing an article and you just have to, poke and poke.
Well, see, I use it shallowly. Quick Look, I hit a space bar on a file and I can do a Quick Look.
Right.
Is there more that I should do?
If you quick look a couple of files, a couple of images, you can then do a full screen and turn it into a slideshow.
Right.
You can get all these quick generators that will let you look at different stuff, like CSV files or InDesign files.
Do you have to download those?
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. If you go find the Tibbetts site, search in Quick Look. And as this article, I could not believe the amount of stuff we discovered while we were writing.
Whatever happened, like Automator and AppleScript, that's still deep in
still
there.
Still there.
But
still there.
Nobody ever talks. Poor Sal. Nobody ever talks about it anymore.
It's funny. It's part of, the Automator tools and the AppleScript tools are just so fundamentally part of some businesses.
Right. They can't take it out.
You couldn't take it out.
Yep.
And it's really useful. When you get your head around it, it is something that I have lots of little tools to convert images and do things that I just, it's just easier to do it, to build a service for that. And then the idea that you can just throw it out there, it's an incredibly powerful architecture that, unfortunately, a lot of people don't know enough about.
I have Automator Actions, these Automator workflows, which are extremely complicated. You know, they're nested, they do different things. But it actually, I can control click on a PDF or an EPUB or a MOBI and select something from a services menu, and it will copy the file and rename it to different places on my server. It will upload it to one or two different remote servers. This is all the distribution I do for Take Control. And it's this very complicated Automator stuff, but it saves me, half an hour every time I invoke those.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's primarily publishers, isn't it? Sal was always talking about how publishers use it.
Publishers really rely on it.
Yeah.
But I guess, sort of the bigger picture, I guess, what I'm getting at, and same thing we're looking at preview right now, is just that there's all this great stuff that's actually deep inside OS X or deep inside these bundled apps that people just have forgotten about if they ever knew. And it's been interesting publishing these articles and getting people saying, oh, wow, I never knew it could do that. That's so great. And I feel like actually made a difference in their lives.
I agree. You know, as it's an operating system that's been around for a long time, and Apple hasn't taken a lot out.
Yeah.
So there's still stuff, but there's also stuff that's kind of, you wonder, you know, has it become vestigial, like the services menu?
There's some interesting stuff you can do with services. Again, people don't really think about it. And but, you know, you want to talk about stuff not getting any love. There's been no changes to it in ages and ages. But there are still some really interesting services out there you can get to manipulate text, open stuff in different apps. You know, just work around the one way that you're normally allowed to something.
Right.
And so both of these kind of series that we've started have been really interesting. I mean, Preview, again, I didn't even know until I started writing this article that Preview can scan, Preview can take screenshots, Preview can download photos from your iPhone. You know, who knew the Preview could do all that stuff? And it's sort of like building in image capture and Grab and the scanner utility, but it's all right there in Preview when you need it.
Yeah, I think that I would love to read an article that's sort of like the built-in system decathlon, the 10 crucial apps that are so useful and solve so many problems. Image capture solved a problem for me yesterday because I was at a neighbor's house trying to find out why she couldn't get data. She couldn't sync something to an older iPod Touch. And knowing that it was probably iTunes doing something very iTunes-y, I launched Image Capture to see if does it appear on the bus to Image Capture? Okay, Image Capture can see this. That means that I can definitely rule out it's a problem with this device. And there's just such a long list of stuff like that. Just classic tools. Like I use Preview all the time. I use TextEdit all the time. A lot of people don't. You show them the console app. And it's like you pull down like a candle on a wall sconce and a whole wall flipped around on their Maxing. My God, where were these error messages coming from? It's like they're like roaches. They've been inside your house all the time. You just only get to see two or three of them scuttling around into the light.
Can I ask a question? Does anybody use the tagging system, you know, the color tagging system in Finder?
No, I don't.
I use it. So what a lot of times what I do is when I'm using the colored system is, especially if I'm copying, like a lot of times we're doing archives of, you know, on site and you're trying to move things around and you want to make sure you remember what was what and who goes where and things that have already been transferred get this color and things that haven't or things that have to go into, the, you know, so it's much easier because then you can also select by those. And so anyway, I definitely... when we're working,
I feel like it's one of those things that Apple wishes they could take out, but they know that there's one in five that use it would scream holy murder.
One of the problems when I started looking at it, I actually had to give up on using it in part because tags transfer via Dropbox. You got everyone else's damn tags.
I didn't
tags.
Know that.
Oh, yes.
It's part of the metadata.
Crazy. Mm. So it was one of those things where, you know, you could have this nice set of your own tags and then there'd be all this other crud in there. So, yeah, I gave up on that.
I feel like I'm not a good Mac user because I don't use them. Like, I should use that. Why don't I use that?
It's one of the new features. Yeah, you know, yeah. The real Mac users don't. We don't need no stinking tags. Oh, yeah.
I still don't know how I feel about color icons, frankly. But that's the difficulty. We are all expert users, but we have the same problem that newbies have, which is once we find something that works great, we're not really very inclined to explore and try to find a different process. And that's universal. I mean, even that's just human experience. I was so determined to find a one-to-one replacement for my Osprey bag that I love that they stopped making like 2 or 3 years ago. I was about to like spend more money on eBay buying secondhand ones or new old stock that it sort of blinded me to the idea of Andy. Yes, you know that the old one works very well for you, but perhaps in the last 5 or 6 years, someone has invented a new bag that's even better for you now that you're using an iPad Pro and this stuff. And that kind of forced me to look for new bags, and I'm really, really happy with it. Then you really have to remind yourself that if there's a process that's working great for you, there can still be a process that works even better for you. And sometimes that involves buying a lot of software that is not going to work for you immediately. And sometimes it involves holding down the option, the shift key, when you click everything just to see what things can do.
I think it's a segment. Your favorite hidden Mac feature.
I was going to say, for Andy, for color icons, if you select any app, any file, document, app, whatever, and hit Command-C to copy it and switch to preview and then choose new from clipboard, you'll get all the icons from that file.
Yep. And then what do you do?
Then you've got...
You make your terminal T-shirt.
That's well, right. That's like from ResEdit days. That's like yes.
It is. I still miss ResEdit. I built a surfer version of Photoshop at one point. So all the messages were like, you know, when it was out of memory, it was like, dude, I can't do that. You know,
and everyone would think that you're this amazing master hacker because you have a copy of Mac Write that says "Edit Man." I'm in for $20 if someone wants to commission a really good 256 pixel logo, a version of the ResEdit icon. I know I can't use it on anything, but I just want a.
What it was a little classic Mac with like a squiggle in it. What did it? I forgot.
It was like a Pop Goes the Weasel, like a pop-up box.
That's right. Oh, that's right. A little Jack in the Box coming out of it. Yeah.
Popping out of the top of it.
I'm sure if I Google ResEdit icon, there's probably somebody out there who is...
But only 188 by 188. Andy's right. We need bigger ones.
There it is. There it is. Well, it's the Jack in the Box.
If you're ever doing one of the great uses for that, by the way, is if you ever are doing a presentation and you happen to be talking about apps... Getting a hold of the really high res icons, they come, you know, they're pings with alpha channels. Mm-hmm. So you just literally grab that ping and throw it into your keynote and boom, it's, you know, so you're
I think what you do is you just have it in your dock, like, and see if anybody notices that you have ResEdit in your dock.
Only
for some reason now I want to build like a really high res version.
Yeah. Oh, he has the new ResEdit. Where can I get that?
An iPad with the Swift logo on it. That'll that'll lead to some excited Q&A.
Silly keynote tricks. And we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more. Actually, your picks coming up in just a second. But first, a word for all of our friends who are suffering with bad web hosting. And I know that's a lot of you with ugly websites that aren't mobile responsive, trying to glom e-commerce onto the side of a site. You don't need to do that. Stop the suffering. Get Squarespace. You really should. Squarespace does it all. Beautiful sites. The templates are done by not only the best designers out there, but also the best engineers. So your site looks great. And by the way, completely customizable. No Squarespace site looks like any other. It's not cookie cutter. In fact, pick a template and then below it, it'll show you all some of the sites that are using it. And you can see how they all look different. They all have a different feel because it's so easy to customize your site. Whether you're a designer or a filmmaker, a photographer, a musician, a blogger, you want your site to be aesthetic, to reflect your personality, your style. Particularly if you're a visual artist, Squarespace is great for artists of all stripes. But also if you're a restaurant, right? Or, you know, you want to match your decor. And you don't want your commerce, if you're selling something on your site, to look like a separate thing that you're going out to. Every Squarespace template has commerce built in. Every single plan has commerce in it. You can choose from, you know, the basic commerce or the professional. You can add all of your social feeds. And by the way, when you sign up for a year, you even get a free domain name. So you're going to look super pro. And no website is more robust than Squarespace. They never go down. You don't have to worry about security because it's handled for you. They update the software. They keep everything safe. Oh, you're going to love it. 24/7 customer support if you ever have a question. It's very affordable. But what you should do right now is try it free. Start your free trial at squarespace.com. When you decide to buy, and we have many viewers who have multiple Squarespace sites, use the offer code MacBreak. You'll get 10% off on that new site and show your support for the show. I love my Squarespace blog. That's where my blog lives, on Squarespace. There's my cover. I use the cover page to do a nice slideshow, and then you can dig deeper in. And I've got a calendar there and a portfolio. I have to put some of these new pictures I've been taking with the Galaxy S7 up there. Squarespace. Use the offer code MacBreak to get 10% off Squarespace. You should. You should. All right. Time for our picks. I'm going to start. I never start. Usually because I don't have anything interesting. But this time I kind of do. It's this little doohickey. By the way, when are we getting a new MacBook on March 21st?
Unlikely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not that there's anything wrong with the old Mac. I love the MacBook. By the way, I have the custom one with the black Apple. Good luck getting that.
You're special. I'm thinking May, but I don't know.
I'd love to see a new one, but I'm still this is my go-to laptop at home all the time. But of course, you know, the one thing that's wrong with it only has one connector, a Type-C connector. So there've been lots of solutions. I own every Type-C cable connector, and everything. This is the one I just got that I love. $50 from HyperDrive. It's a 5-in-1 hub that matches the finish. It fits in flush. It does what you need a connector to do. You can power your Mac through the Type-C on here. It's actually two-way, so you could actually charge your phone with it as well. It has an SD card and a micro SD card reader and two USB 3 ports. This is nice. It's elegant. It's simple. It's beautiful. You can get it to match silver, gold, or space gray, the finish of your Mac, although why anyone would have anything but a gold MacBook, I don't know. $50, and I bought one just to see if I'd like it, and I do, and so I got another one for Lisa because she has a MacBook too. Very nice. Now I can just travel with this, and I have everything I need. You know, I can put the USB card, you know, the thumb drives in there, the memory cards in there, everything I need. It's not no Ethernet port. Okay, sorry, but it's compact. I know you're the only one who wants one, actually, Alex Lindsay.
No, you could just use the
USB
to Ethernet.
I have plenty of those. Okay. Yeah. All right. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I have a silly pick, and then I have a more serious pick. So the silly pick is we've been talking about this for a while at the office. So one of the guys brought this in. Marty brought this in. And so this is, you know, just a little, you know.
A killer flashlight. Is it a tactical flashlight?
No, it's not. It's not even that bright. It's just bright enough, but not too bright. But this is the part that makes it kind of cool is you can pull it out, and of course you can, you know, like turn the little.
Oh,
you know,
so now you have, it's got like, a gooseneck.
Oh, but it gets better. But there's more. You can.
Pull it out, it's like an extensible.
Look at that.
You can use it as a pointer or a cat toy,
or a whip or something. Anyway,
okay.
And then it's got a magnet. It's got a magnet at the bottom, so you can like stick it to anything that's metal. So I have found this to be remarkably useful when we're in production because you'll find something, you just stick it to it, and with a little light on,
you can find it.
Like $9. So it's on Amazon. I can't remember the name. It doesn't really matter. There's a whole bunch of them that look like this. If you do like gooseneck flashlight or whatever, and get the cheapest one because they're all the same.
So it's all from the same Chinese company.
It's the same Chinese company that makes them. And some are $19. I bought like four of them just for our listeners. I bought a group of them to figure out exactly which one was the best, thinking that the more expensive one might be the best. And it turns out it was identical.
They range from $7 to $80.
Yeah,
you can get an $80 one.
I did not buy an $80 one. I did buy some of them might be different, but everything up to about $20 seems to be the same. Anyway, it's slick. It runs off of the whole it's just running off of like a little watch battery or something like a little flat battery. So it's pretty compact. Anyway, so that's the silly one. The one that's really useful is one of the white whale that I've been going after for a long time is finding a way to get professional cameras to get into Skype without using Skype TX. So I have Skype TX, but I need more connections than one, and I don't want to spend $4,000 a pop. I do like it, and it's useful to have one of them. I don't want four of them necessarily. So what I found here is this, and it's actually hard to show you because it's being used at the moment. So.
You're using it right now.
Yeah, this is the InnoGenie. It's SDI to USB 3, and they have HDMI, DVI to USB 3. The HDMI one is 4K. I think that's the one that's the link that I sent. So it's 4K, And all of them, when you connect it to your Mac, will show up in Skype as a web camera. So this has been a big issue because a lot of the tools that we've had up until now, they won't show up in Skype, and so you end up not being able to put a real camera or a camera system or anything else into Skype directly. You need something you needed for a while the Skype TX box to do that. So that's been sorted. And it's pretty nifty. There's a lot of reasons to have a Skype TX box for broadcasters and so on and so forth. But if you're looking for something a little less expensive, I think this is $395 and a little bit more expensive than some of the other ways to integrate to get cameras in. But this is the only one that I've tested that works in BlueJeans, Hangouts, Skype. So it seems to work across the board, and it's been very useful. So anyway, that's my pick.
Very nice. Very nice. If you need it, you know you need it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't know, you don't need it.
Oh, my gosh, that is amazing. Everyone else is like, huh? Why would you ever spend $395 on that?
What the heck is that, dude? Mr. Adam Engst, do you have something you like, you're excited about, you want to pick?
I do, and I have to say this falls into the very silly category, but you know, as you guys know, I'm a country boy, and sometimes I just want a little background ambiance without having to play Spotify. Don't do Apple Music. Keep Apple Music away from my devices. But so I don't want to do music, and so I ran across this thing called Noisio, and it is a free little app that gives you sound. But what's cool about it is that it has all of these different looping sounds it can make, and you can mix them. Oh. So I have this for me, perfect sound that includes, you know, sort of birds and farm noises and, you know, just a little bit of a stream in the background. And, you know, it's one of those things. I turn it on and it's just, I don't know, it's just relaxing. And, you know, and my son came in and is like, those digital birds? You know, I don't see any birds here. What are these birds I'm hearing? And it sounds great, and I really like being able to configure it to just the exact level of you know, each type of sound.
You could be in a Paris cafe with a thunderstorm going on.
Yes.
And
precisely,
birds.
and that's in birds. There's some that really don't quite make sense, you know, like the farm and the sailing schooner, for instance. You know, you're like, okay, we got Bessie on the ship. But I have to say, you know, as I said, having grown up on a farm, the sounds are right. It's exactly what it sounds like, and you know, some of us just.
Paul, Uncle Earl got his foot in the thresher again. Got Frick with a shotgun.
How many times have I heard that? Noisio is Noiz.io, and it's Mac or iOS.
Yeah, I haven't tried it on iPhone just because I don't know. I don't listen to. I don't need my iPhone making noises at me. I'm just walking around with my pocket.
I remember that the first time that I was able to move into a big enough apartment that I didn't have to like sleep in the same room that all my other stuff was, I found it so hard to get to sleep because I was used to the white noise of like my tower Mac. There was always this that was A, so pleasant, but also reminded me that whenever the room was completely silent, it meant that something was wrong because that fan should always be spinning. And it really did take me a couple of weeks. But it was like having a new dog where I'm just going to sleep in the office a couple of nights a week until I get used to the idea of not having fans, those fans in my bedroom.
You can actually, I think Spotify and other systems have kind of ambient sounds that you can, even Pandora, I think, has ambient sounds.
Probably.
But this is nice because you can create your own.
It's the configurability part that I like, you know, because a lot of the times when I just, you know, like, oh, there's one thing, it's just sort of the same all the time. And it's nice to be able to, you can make your own collections. And so you can switch from, you know, the thunderstorm on the sailing ship to the, you know, the coffee shop to the sunny day in the woods kind of thing.
This is nice because I have a tinnitus, you know, ringing in the ears. And it turns out that kind of rain sounds kind of actually improve it. Now, how come I'm looking at it? I have October Rain Coffeehouse and Thunderstorm, but How come these are grayed out? Campfire and I just have to tap them. I can turn them all on.
Fire at a coffee house.
Holy cow! Oh my God, we are inside a train on the farm. It's insane, and the blue whales, they're coming. Okay, that probably wouldn't be.
No, you know, Kelvin and Hobbes has the airplane and the train wreck, and it's like it's all happening at once. That's what I.
What I like is this is actually will be in your menu, and then you can have it start at login. You can even have it play after launch, so you can just have it. You know, whenever you're at your Mac. I love this, and it's free.
So what's not to like?
Golly.
I'm feeling more calm already.
I love the idea that someone didn't do this in a half-arsed way. It was if I'm going to do this, let's make the best version of this I can possibly do. This is what I can contribute to the entire world. Just the best, the only version of this that ever needs to exist.
I'm going to turn off Deep Space, the sailing yacht. Maybe I'll have the train every once in a while. No more farm. This is nice. It's fun.
Rooster is an acquired taste. I mean, I like the rooster, but I could see someone not.
Yeah. Yeah. If you grew up with a farm, you probably have a mixed feelings.
A little bit, and I like just a little bit of wind chimes, you know, not so. Feel like
every once in a while, a blue whale. Yeah. I'm going to turn off the train. I don't need to be inside the train. Oh, that's nice. Do you hear the whales? Noisio. It's in the App Store on both Macintosh and iOS. And that's how it's going to sound on our podcast from now on. Andy and Otko, your pick of the week.
Really excited about this. Just yesterday, the Raspberry Pi organization released the Raspberry Pi 3 computer.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this for a while. This is not the Raspberry Pi 3. This is the Raspberry Pi 2 because they sent me one a couple of weeks ago to play with. And so it's as Raspberry Pis are there. It's hooked up to all kinds of cool stuff that I'm building and experimenting with. And I couldn't like disentangle it to put it on camera. You've probably if you haven't heard of the Raspberry Pi, this is a $35 computer based on a system on a chip that can do pretty much whatever you ever want a computer to do. It'll be whatever you want it to be. So if you want it to be a media server, you can install Linux on it and use it as a media server, use it as a weak powered desktop computer. You can use it as a game emulator. You can use it as pretty much whatever you want. It has built-in HDMI, has built-in four USB ports, has an Ethernet port, and it also has this hardware header, so you can basically add on and build whatever component that whatever you want to build this with. So if you want to add, if you have, let's say your Wall-E toy, this is not. I built this with a previous project. So if you have your Wall-E toy and you notice that it has a demonstrator switch on it, and you want it to. And you want it so that you can activate it over the internet or use it so that every time something happens on Twitter, Eve wakes up and does something to let you know that that's happened. I don't have this sort of electronic engineering mojo to do that myself. However, I can just simply easily build an interface for that on this by hooking this up to like two pins and maybe a resistor and then write some Python code that runs on this that looks at web pages or looks at Twitter, has a Twitter command line sort of stuff and makes things work that way. Again, I love it because the Apple II was the last computer that I ever used that I felt like I know everything going on inside and outside this machine. There's nothing I cannot do with this because I know every scrap of code on this and I know how to build hardware for it. This is takes you back to that sort of thing, and it costs 35 stinking bucks. And once again, if you just want to use it as you have a kid that wants to, and you want to have them have a desktop computer in their own room, you can install Chromium on this and essentially turn it into a Chromebook. And once again, just plug it into any USB mouse, any USB keyboard, and any HDMI screen, and you have a desktop machine. I've set one up to just be a media player. It hasn't, of course, doesn't have a rotating hard drive, but it does have a micro SD slot, so I can put 128 gigs or 200 gigs of storage on this on board. Or if I want to actually plug in a spinning hard drive, it will interact with a spinning hard drive. That's how flexible it is. Now, the Raspberry Pi 3, put down Eve, is a huge, huge step up because now for the first time it actually has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi actually on the board. This used to be something where you'd buy like a little tiny micro dongle and put them into two of these ports. That's one of the reasons why when they updated it a couple years ago, they added four ports because everybody would put Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on it. Now it's on board and it has, as small as this is, it's, in my testing, it's about as powerful as the Wi-Fi or Bluetooth you'd find on your phone. So it's not as though you have to plug in an external antenna. So as a result, you can just basically install this anywhere and you have a networked, completely internet-aware machine that will do damn near anything you want it to do. And if you're saying, but I don't know anything about programming in Python, I don't know anything about electronic engineering, I don't know how to get cool sensors and components, that's where you go to Adafruit. Because there is, this device was originally designed as an educational computer to make sure that every kid in every school could have a computer they could work on and learn about computers with. And as a result, it is born from this culture of if you've done something cool or interesting with it, you're not going to try to sell a piece of software or sell a hardware add-on. You're going to publish how you did that. So it is actually quite simple to attach like an LCD touchscreen to it. It's very, very simple to add sensors and buttons. Or if your Cub Scout group wants to do like a version of Jeopardy and you need like those three like buzz in controllers, you'll be able to find those projects right there. And it just gives you, the more you look at sites like Adafruit.com where they show you, they'll not only sell you the components, but they'll also show you how to interface them, the more interesting ideas you come up with. My next project, because I keep buying Raspberry Pis as they come out. So as a result, my old main Raspberry Pi is now available. And now I've got this idea where I've got like my the modem that was part that was pretty much my life in high school. And just looking at these dancing lights LEDs in the front. And so now my idea was this is the actual modem, so I don't want to. It's too precious to me. But I bought an identical one off of eBay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out all the guts, replace it with a Raspberry Pi 3. So it's always going to be on. It's always going to be a media server and a sensor server. But I've also bought from Adafruit a bank of NeoPixels that will replace the existing LEDs in here so that I will be able to once again look up from the sofa at this box and see a familiar sequence of twinkling lights that I know that this means that things are normal. But if something is going on, let's say there's movement in the backyard or a file server or a print server on the network has failed, there's going to be another pattern of lights that will tell me without having to actually look at ASCII readouts that will just show me what's going on. I hope you take from this my enthusiasm for this stupid cockamamie project that I'm going to have a lot of fun doing. That's not going to be terribly useful, but is eminently doable because I have this $35 thing that is eminently documented and eminently supported by a big community that doesn't put any limitations on what you can do. I can think of no better gift for a kid, let's say 8 years old or up, that shows an aptitude and a desire to build stuff. Than a Raspberry Pi. Again, this is real power. It's
those are all Model 2s, Jason. If you show my screen, I have the Model 3.
Yeah, it was.
It's
just
still on. Still back ordered. So you know have to wait
because it was just announced like yesterday.
Yeah. Father Robert has one. We're going to play with it on Saturday on the new screensavers. I know you've been in touch with him.
Yeah, it's
so awesome.
As I said, I can't tell you how enthusiastic it's. I think that the Raspberry Pi is easily as impressive a computer as even the iPad Pro, as anything that Apple has made, because this is, again, a $35 computer that a kid can own, and not just because they have $35, meaning that there is nothing they are not allowed to do with this. There's nothing that is not documented. Any idea they have, they can figure out how to do it. If they want to build a robot, they can build a robot. They can do anything with it. And if they do blow it up, 35 stinking bucks. You can buy another one. It's easy as pie.
It's great. So, it comes, thanks to Microsoft, you can get Windows 10 on it, but you can also get Minecraft on it. Yep. And it's a special edition of Minecraft that has an API for Python. It comes with Python and IDLE. So it's a great computer for learning how to program. I mean, really great for learning how to program.
Yeah.
Just in every way.
It's nice when you do a Hello World program on whatever computer you're using, but it's quite another thing when you write a piece
to build a pyramid as, in Minecraft.
I'm thinking just as simple as I've hooked up an LED, and I can make that light go
light
on
up.
And off.
And I can hook up
a push button to it that it will, the LED will only come on if I tap the button three times, not two and not four. That is amazing because you're building something real. That this is not just lights on a screen. This is a physical object that you can make. Once you teach them how to hook it up with stepper motors and stuff like that and servos, oh my freaking God. It's just quite amazing.
The key thing, and I didn't really realize it until I got the last Raspberry Pi, which of course I just bought, which is why they came out with a new one, is that it really is a computer. It's just a computer. It's a $35 computer. It's not a hobbyist breakout box or something. This is a full computer.
It doesn't stick together with Legos.
Yeah.
The new one is a big step up, not only because it now has that on those onboard wireless features, but also the CPU is about a third more powerful. The upper limits of what you could really do with the previous Pi were evident once you load up a web browser on it and try to launch The Verge or some other really, really script-heavy site. Now, if you put Chromium on it, it can keep up with it just fine. If you want to use it for Google Apps, it will really just keep up with all that stuff just fine. It's just powerful enough now that it will be a very credible machine for pretty much any basic task you want to throw at it.
Highly recommend Arduino, Andy.
An Arduino is a lot electronically. It's a lot simpler because it's not booting up into a command prompt. An Arduino is more of a microcontroller, more of a programmable controller than a real computer. You can, for instance, Adafruit will teach you how to hook up a display to it and get input and output from it. But that's the best way to illustrate it. If you hook up a display to Raspberry Pi, you will get a login screen and a command prompt and a GUI that responds to a mouse. So if you want to make it work like a standard computer as opposed to something you program to do cool stuff, then that's what the Pi will do for you.
And there's a couple of things that I use Arduino for that I'm working, playing around with an Arduino for that is very low. You know, you actually don't want it to be thinking. You want it to do exactly what you tell it to do very quickly and very low latency. And but there's a lot of limitations to that. But it does, you know, we...
think of this as a Linux computer. I mean, it really, it's just a full computer.
It runs a version of Debian.
Yeah. Raspberry.
Right. And so, but I'm just about to start playing with the Raspberry Pi. And specifically, I want to get my son into it. He's 8. And
perfect for that.
It was funny. I really was kind of looking sideways at Minecraft until we were talking about it.
You mentioned
with Python, I was like, oh, because I told him, you know, you can program to build stuff, and his eyes got really big, and I was like, oh, he's going to be like a little.
He writes five lines of code that builds a little house, and then and the house is there.
Yeah,
and then he'll be off to the races.
Even just as a utility sort of thing, there was a couple of years ago. There was a situation where I just needed to know how many times was a certain door being opened and closed. In my house, maybe there were easier ways to do it. Maybe it wasn't a terribly complex problem, but it just occurred to me that I could easily do that. I can write the code I can hook up a magnetic switch to the door, plug it into the Raspberry Pi. It runs off of it'll run off of a standard like micro USB charger or battery pack, and so I just simply I installed an Apache web server on it. And it took me all of like 45 minutes to write code that would simply create a static web page with a number on it of how many times since power up has this door been opened and closed. And so from anywhere in the house or theoretically anywhere in the world, I could then simply open up that web page. That's simply a file on this little Raspberry Pi and find out, okay, I've opened this door 35 times so far this month. Or the person who is allowed entry to that shed has, okay, I guess they were in and out of that shed a couple of times. Nothing nefarious. I was just trying to figure out. It was about time for me to start putting locks on it. And I was trying to figure out how much would it inconvenience this other person that's storing tools in my shed if I were to put a lock on it and give him a copy of the key. And I was like, okay, so he only tends to use it a couple times a month, so it wouldn't inconvenience him all that much. And like I said, if it were a real electronic engineering project, it would be way, way too much for me to say, I want to create a web server-based machine so I could access from anywhere. But because I have like now three or four of these, it was like, okay, And if it's I had it like actually just like in a Ziploc baggie outside, because if someone was walking through the backyard and stole it, okay, I'd be sad about it. But okay, $35, who cares?
Andy and Akko, Adafruit, good place to get Raspberry Pi. It's back ordered now, of course, because it hasn't come into stock. But adafruit.com. We love Lady Ada and want to support her. But there are lots of other places that sell the Raspberry Pi 3, or will when it gets in stock. One last story that just came in, and it's very timely. The gentleman who invented public key cryptography, Whitfield Diffie and Martin Hellman, just won the Turing Prize. A $1 million prize is considered the Nobel Prize of Computing from the Association of Computing Machinery. So congratulations to Whit Diffie and his partner, Martin Hellman, and who invented probably the most important technology for communication of the 21st century, public key crypto. Well done. Well done.
With a backdoor, of course.
No backdoors in theirs.
Whatever we were able to reach them in the basement room where they're now being held.
Yeah. There's a picture of them in 1977 when they were working on it. Hippies. Of course they were. Hey, I want to thank everybody for joining us for Mac Break Weekly. Thanks especially to Adam Engst. Love having you on. Come back soon. Tidbits.com.
Thanks, Evan.
The oldest Mac journal in existence, and one you must read weekly because it's wonderful. Subscribe to the mailing list. He also has the great Take Control series of books that really do help you take control of your Mac. I can't wait to read the one, the hidden Mac stuff. That sounds great.
I was going to say, we're working that. It's coming. You know, we're going to do the articles, and then we're going to put them all together.
Good.
We got plans now.
You got a sale right here. I'll tell you, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us, Adam. We appreciate it. Alex Lindsay joining us from we don't know where, but doesn't matter because we can put him anywhere in the world. Of course, you'll find him at
this background is working so well.
It's so realistic. He's also on the Twitter at Alex Lindsay, S-A-Y. And of course, Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you for being here at Inako on the Twitter, I-H-N-A-T-K-O. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure we'll talk in about half an hour on Security Now with Steve Gibson about Whit Diffie and public key crypto and all that. The RSA conference is going on right now. I'm sure there'll be some news from RSA as well. But if you want to watch Mac Break Weekly each and every week, I highly encourage you to tune in live 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on Twit TV. And if you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video on our website, twit.tv/MBW, on the many apps like Stitcher, the Twit apps themselves, and, of course, whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Or you could just, if you have an Amazon Echo, you could just say, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn, and you'll hear it. Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Incidentally, if you are watching live, Apple's team, legal team, is now being sworn in. So
we're going to switch to that C-SPAN. As soon as I am done. You don't have to switch to C-SPAN. Just stay tuned.
Okay. Yes.
We're going to, and it's also on YouTube. They're streaming, and that's where we're getting our stream. We're not stealing C-SPAN's stream. Thanks for joining us. Now, back to the House Judiciary Committee, which is already in progress. We'll see you next time. Break time is over.